All right, so this is Project Server 2013 deployment best practices. We called it From the Field. That's because I'm a premier field engineer. My name is Raphael Ax. I'm based in Germany, working for our Microsoft Premier customers. So all these customers having a premier contract, they can call in the premier field engineers for on-site support. So in case you don't know what that actually is. I even brought with me two more PFEs, even the green guys over here, which is Akbar from South Africa, and we have Artem from Russia. So they will even take a part of that speech later on. The session is actually divided in different sections. So in the beginning, I would like to start to give you some, I would say, some overview of basic requirements we were actually talking about. So that will then build the basis for the further sessions, so for the further things we're talking about. I will then get some details on especially the SQL Server best practices for Project Server 2013. And then I will hand over to Artem, giving capacity planning best practices, giving even more on the operational stuff. And Akbar then later on finishes with upgrade migration part and monitoring. So that's actually, I mean, we decided on these topics because we thought on the experience we have made with our customers being on site with Project Server 2013, that should be the things really considering when doing the deployment or when reviewing deployments of our customers, what we actually did. So just to give me a feeling about the audience, about your experience with Project Server 2013. So who actually has already deployed Project Server 2013? Really on-premise as well, so having the experience or is planning to deploy it. All right. So that gives us about two-thirds of the audience having at least a little bit of experience with it, having played around with it. So it's now some time on the market. So that's very good. Some of them have not even played with it. Okay, so good. I think then we have lots of interesting topics to talk about today. Let me just get a quick start then with the basic requirements. So just giving an overview, a slight overview on what we have with the software and hardware requirements, even based on what we see in the internet, what we see on TechNet, and what we see then as best practices when really going to our customers, really understanding what we recommend to them when talking to these guys. Starting with the SQL Server requirements. So as you know, if you've played around with these, we support majorly two different versions of SQL Server, which is SQL Server 2012 and SQL Server 2008 R2 with the SP1. From the best practices point of view, so if you would ask me, hey, what would be the version we should definitely go for? There are good reasons to go for SQL Server 2012. I mean, we for sure know we have still lots of customers based on 2008 R2, so there is nothing really against it. But still, you will see later on that there are good reasons to go with 2012, especially in regards of high availability and performance. A side note here, SQL Server 2014 is not yet supported. But based on the latest comments I've seen, that's yet to come. So you should probably then see some announcement around that one within the next month. So that looks actually pretty good. If you think about the components to deploy for SQL Server, for Project Server 2013, well, for sure we just need, as a basic requirement, we need the database engine to let it all run, as Project Server holds all the data, SharePoint holds all the data in SQL Server. But we have two, if you have reviewed SQL Server in detail, we have two additional components you should definitely consider. And even from the best practices point of view, we see that it's absolutely necessary considering them, which is analysis services and reporting services from SQL Server. Even there, we see some more reasons to go for SQL 2012, because especially in reporting services, there has been major investments in making things better and easier for deployment and for doing reporting. And we think these are definitely valuable to consider because a major thing why I see our customers deploying Project Server is actually because they want to have an overview on their data, right? So they do lots of effort to bring the project data in to really understand which projects are they working on, what are they doing. And especially with the analysis services, with the OLAP cubes Project Server is even building out of the box, and the reporting services, so the huge reporting features inside there. Especially using these, you have a major ability to get all that data outside of Project Server again. Right, so I think, therefore, definitely when deploying, when planning for deployment, consider having these even in your plans. Going on the application server and web front-end server side, so just as a few notes on that one, as you know, Windows Server 2012, Windows Server 2008 are two SP1 supported in all their different versions, depending on the needs. As a side note there, there is, again, good reasons to go for Windows Server 2012, right? So there's lots of investments, especially in the area of security, of manageability of that Windows Server system. But from our point of view, I mean, there is nothing against going with Windows Server 2008 R2. That's actually even what I see with most of our customers, at least, so I'm based in Germany and in Western Europe, at least what we see there, right? So definitely there is nothing against that one. Just a side note, an interesting story, actually, and that's why I even put that on the slide here. You might know, so the server core is not supported to be used with SharePoint and Project Server, but still, actually, I had one customer who was even able to install SharePoint and Project Server. In the beginning, I didn't even know that this is possible. So I was really playing around with it and installing some GUI components in Windows Server, and then was really able to make it running and was thinking, hey, you made a fine job, because he felt like, okay, that's working, and so it's somehow easier to manage for me. But still, it's not supported, and that's for good reasons, because when I was going on site and understanding what he was really doing, we have seen lots of background issues, actually, in that system in behind. So it was just feeling like, hey, there is something running, but not really. Right? So from our perspective, I mean, it's not supported, so in the end, we don't even would like to touch that kind of stuff. Okay? Even on a side note, so R2 not supported yet. Based on the latest notes I've seen, the SP1 for SharePoint and Project Server will then add that support for this version of SQL Server. So if it's interesting then for you, for Windows Server, sorry, then keep that kind of side note. Project Server has lots of additional features, I've called. So one of the most interesting features, you should have even played around with these, is, for example, the task synchronization. So really having your Project Server tasks in one place, which is then Exchange Server in that perspective, or Outlook from the end user perspective, even Outlook Web App. Here, I think, and this is something you definitely need to consider when deploying this stuff, is you need Exchange Server 2013. And this is some requirement which many of our customers still do not meet. So just take that into account when deploying, because we have seen some deployments already, and then they were just that keen on this feature, on using the task synchronization, and then they ended up in saying, hey, oh, well, it's not working with the current Exchange infrastructure we have. So take that into account when planning your deployment to have that set. Again, about reporting. Yeah, just one question. I think there is no connection between the Project Server on-premise and the Exchange online. So that will not work. Yeah. So that, yeah, will not work. Thanks, Artem. About reporting, I think here the interesting thing is, especially for the new features, getting data outside of Project Server, which is the OData feed. For that one, you would require Excel 2013, so consider that when planning your reports, if you plan to use these features, especially, I would say, for sure, valid for Project Online later on, because that's one of the, let's say, methods to get the data outside of there using OData. You need Excel 2013, and even there, we've seen some customers, well, ending up, want to have these reports, and it didn't work because they didn't have the right version of Excel. And as you know, it's not just a matter of weeks to deploy a new version of Office, right? So take that even into account when planning deployment. There was a question? Uh-huh. You mean, so the question is, if you have, so Exchange Online running together with on-premise, Exchange on-premise, right? So hybrid solution for Exchange, and then Project Server on-premise, right? Well, yeah, so then you would have been, or you should be able to connect to the on-premise solution, right? The Exchange server. So that should actually not be an issue to get that running, because you need to be able to configure your Exchange on-premise environment to be able to connect to Project Server. And in your case, you would be. Okay, so just a short side note on that one. As you know, we now support lots of different browsers for Project Server 2013, much more than we had before for PWA. So compatibility is very high here. Minimum requirement is IE8. Nevertheless, from our experience, from the best practice point of view, we see a major performance increase when using the new versions of IE, right? So especially IE10, IE11, there has been much performance improvements to work with the new, let's say, site structure of SharePoint, especially about PWA in our case. So that is definitely an improvement if you're currently running IE8 and plan to deploy Project Server 2013, consider even updating your IE infrastructure. Okay, having IE10 or IE11, that's absolutely experience. All right, from the software going to the hardware, just a quick overview on that one. You should know, I mean, if you look at the basic requirements for Project Server, we have that one actually in TechNet, right, saying the minimum requirements for running a Project Server environment. I put that here, and especially not recommended for production use, because what actually happens for some of our customers is they start with Project Server, they do some kind of proof of concept, they do it with a very limited amount of resources on premise, sometimes exactly with that kind of stuff, so they deploy it on one server, right? And then what normally happens, because budget is limited and the project is maybe ended and whatever, they really end up with that server coming from a proof of concept, but being production now and growing and growing and growing and growing. And I mean, for us in some way, it's good because then a PFE comes on site and can see lots of great issues to troubleshoot. Right? So I really like that kind of environment, but I mean, so never consider doing that deployments. So it's good for sure for proof of concept. That's why we put it here. That's why we put it in TechNet. It's a minimum requirement to run it with this. But do never consider such things for productive deployments. Okay? Because you will not see at least a happy PFE then in the end if you come on site. And probably not see happy users using this one. Okay? That's actually one of the reasons why some people think that Project Server doesn't perform well. And then we come on site and see that kind of deployments. And I say, okay, well, I mean, how could you? That's what I sometimes say. And therefore, when considering a Project Server, or actually that's even valid for SharePoint environment at all, always consider the three different layers or three different tiers we offer in SharePoint in Project Server. So meaning having a separate SQL Server at least, environment, clustered, whatever. We talk about that later on, what that could be for SQL Server. Having a separate server or multiple servers for your application layer, so SQL Server application layer, which would be the project application service for our from our perspective, and having separate servers for the web front end tier. And the web front end even becomes more and more important for Project Server 2013. We'll see that later on why that is. So this is the basic thing, right? The three layers, they always should be in place to have a great environment, to have a good performant environment. Because only then you would be able to scale up or out based on the requirements you have for your users. Okay? Only with this kind of deployment and that would be possible. Otherwise, you would end up in very big issues, actually. And if you, let's say, if you would ask me, okay, what would then be a good infrastructure we could think about when considering project on-premise deployments, it would look similar to that one. It's not saying, hey, this is the best one you could ever think of, but if I would like to dream of what I could have from the Project Server perspective, it probably would somehow look like that. What you see here, even starting from the SQL layer, having two instances of SQL Server that could be, especially with SQL Server 2012, that could either be a clustered SQL Server, that could either be always on with SQL Server 2012, right, so there is new features you could really leverage, but at least consider for high availability and for performance from some perspective, depending on how you configure it, to have two different SQL Server instances. Okay, that's a good basis to start off. Then going to the application layer, having a separate server running, let's say, from the Project Server perspective, I should say all the basic SharePoint service application, meaning well, as they are not that important in Project Server for sure, right? So meaning user profile service, meaning metadata service, whatever you might require for your Project Server deployment. So all the basic stuff to make SharePoint running. Then on the left side, having a separate server for search, because search becomes more and more important for Project Server deployment. Right? This is really much what we see at many deployments. We have lots of data in the project sites, lots of documents, lots of risks, lots of issues, and the more you use that, I would say, kind of SharePoint part of Project Server, the higher your usage of SharePoint search will be. For sure, you could even leverage, if you have a separate SharePoint environment somewhere, you could even leverage that search component, right, and share it for that environment. But if you don't have, so if that would be your only SharePoint environment, then this would be the way to deploy it, at least one server for the search, maybe even more, depending on how your index and query structure look like. Okay, so lots of different options there, but at least that one. For Project Server, I've put in actually two application servers, and they, from my perspective, as this is the most important in that environment, they should only run the Project Server service application, right? So that you have, at least for high availability, at least two servers running the Project Server queue, running the project calculation service, the event service, right? So really running Project Server. So if one server has an issue, the other one takes over, and you for sure can run much more Project Server threats in parallel. So much more Project Server jobs can be worked in parallel. That's the application layer. As I said, so you can scale up or scale out in that layer depending on your needs. This is what we really see. So add another application server, add another search server. So really play around with this depending on what you require. And additionally, having at least two web front-end servers. And as I said, these become more and more important. We'll see later on why that is. Okay, two web front-end servers only running the PWA side. Whatever you have in SharePoint, do them on other servers, whatever you like, but have them on separate web front-ends. Well, I mean, there we have the load balancer right on top for that one, right? So it. Yes, it is. Yeah, sure. It is. Yeah, it is. So one thread is going to, or one request is going to the other is going to the second server. Yes, it is. All right, so, okay, sorry, maybe if the question was if that load balancing is new in 2013, so it's not new. So in 2010, it was actually the same, so it was load balanced there as well. If you had two queue servers. You can, actually. You can. So maybe we take that offline, not to lose too much here. But this is definitely a load balancing infrastructure. And that's very similar to 2010. But we'll take that offline. I can just come back here then. Okay? So, but just that one, so at least the two web front ends, just to cover, then even we come to that later, the higher workload on the web front end. So this is very important to consider there. Having few comments on the architecture to even understand why this actually is like that. You know that picture probably, right? Because that is the, it was nice, but I mean, Project Server 2010 architecture. Seen that in TechNet lots of times, lots of our presentations, and so far so good, I would say. But I think we made lots of investments in that one. If you see the new one, Project 2013 architecture, so it's, I mean, nice green color, isn't it? I mean, so we did lots of investment in the coloring now, so red and green and so on. So I think this is really good. No, so there are lots of great things, and they even play into account when you plan for your deployment, right? So if we go through the different layers, starting with the web front end in that case, because there has been made a change which is absolutely important and especially improves your performance in the end, but you need to take that into account when planning, which is that the web front end now is able to do direct database requests, right? Means everything, so let's go a step back. So everything in 2010 was like that. You were doing a request, and it was going from the, no matter what request it was, actually. So for project server, no matter what it was going to the web front end, then going over, because all the business logic was based on the application servers, going over the application server, and only then to the database. Okay. We have seen, well, that takes time, that eats up resources, that's maybe not necessary for something, because it does not everything go to the, through the queue, okay? And therefore, we decided now, okay, why not directly putting the business objects, some business objects, on the web front ends and making the database requests directly from there if it does not require the queuing or the new project calculation service, okay? That means that improves performance, but only if you now consider that your web front ends now need to be much stronger than before. Before was simply, let's say, a stupid SharePoint site, not doing much more than that. But now it really eats up performance in there. So consider that when planning and do high monitoring on these web front ends, because they now do much more stuff. On the application server, I think two improvements, I would say. One major improvement, let's go to that one, which is the new project calculation service. That's actually, as you, if you have read that one, we now have the same calculation engine that we have in the project client, now even on the server, right? So in 2010, it could even happen in some strange circumstances that you could have different calculation results depending on where you did the calculation of the, or the scheduling of the project, right? So it could sometimes happen. No longer could happen with that one because we simply use the same code for the scheduling, right? In the beginning, it was different code on server, different code on the client. Now that's much better. But again, as we now introduce that additional Windows service, you should monitor your application servers much more. So we've seen lots of customers not really considering these changes and then ending up with having the same, let's say, the same CPU, same RAM on their application servers than in 2010. You should consider add more, especially as we now have that additional workload with that Windows service. But the good thing here is you could now dedicate your monitoring to specific parts in project. So before it was only the queue eating up everything, right? So now it's at least separated, the calculation and the queuing, right? Saving, publishing, and all of that stuff, okay? And you could dedicate your monitoring on all of that. Database server, I would say that is one of the investments I absolutely appreciate. So even for me, when maintaining, when operating, and hopefully even for you, that we now only have one single database for project server, right? So for the project server service application. Before it was four, if you remember the old architecture, published, archive, blah, blah, blah. Now it's only one, everything consolidated in that one single database, and that helps us so much doing monitoring and especially doing backup and recovery. Before, it was always a big mess from my perspective somehow. Being able to synchronize these four databases, having a good backup, right? So to be honest, I don't know too many customers who, I mean, they were able to successfully recover, but that was just good luck, so they weren't really sure that all these four databases were in sync. They couldn't really tell, so it could be that some queue jobs were running, they didn't even know. So it was like, okay, maybe we have good luck, but we don't really know. Maybe some projects are broken. So you could never know in that situation. And this could no longer happen with this new single, only single database. Okay. So I think this is a major improvement. Probably we've even made that improvement because we now host project online, right? So, and we now need to have that, all that operational procedures internally as well. Probably we realized, okay, having four database for one tenant is not really working well. So we now have only one. That helps even Microsoft IT a lot. Right? So I really like that change. Lots of other minor changes, I would say. One of the minor big ones is in that we now even add the maintenance jobs for doing the defragmenting of the indexes. But still, from the best practice point of view, don't just leave them running like they are. So consider monitoring how your index fragmentation on the project server database is behaving. So don't just say, hey, that's working, that's fine. No, just check it, right? So really monitor what your statistics are doing, monitor what this stuff is doing. Two more questions, and then coming to the SQL stuff, and soon even coming to Artem. Two questions I get for Project Server about the deployment scenarios. Maybe you come across these as well, which is it necessary? What is best practice about if I have a major SharePoint environment? Should I put in Project Server there as well? Right? And the thing is, it depends. So depends on lots of different things, right? Some customers decide to integrate because they say, well, my SharePoint environment is that good running, and I want to have Project Server good running as well, so I put it on the SharePoint environment. But lots of customers say, hey, why should I put it there? Because Project Server has separate considerations in the regards of backup recovery, in regards of upgrading and all this. So why should I, do I really need all that, what I have for SharePoint? And for some of them, the question is no. Well, the numbers you see here is not really based on a poll, but it's based on what we see on site with our customers. So that's still about 80% of the customers, at least in Western Europe, decide to go with a separate environment for Project Server. Okay, so that's, it might change in the future, but right now that's still the case for that reason given. And one last comment about the question I get quite oftenly is, do we still have that backward compatibility mode in Project 2013? I think it's documented in about 20 blogs, it's documented in 5 technical articles, whatever, and no, we no longer have that. For good reasons, I would say, so we don't get into details here why, but we no longer have it, so Project 2010 is no longer working, is not working with Project 2013. Sorry? All right. Well, so as I said, if you already have a huge SharePoint environment, right, with about 20, 30, 50 servers, whatever, and if you want to integrate your Project Server in that one, you have to install it on each of the single servers, which means you have to license it on each of the single servers. And if you only use Project Server, let's say if you plan your Project Server environment only with 5, 6 servers, and that would be enough from the performance perspective, you would have only to license it for these ones. That would be a good one about that one. All right. Just shortly, actually, not to eat too much time on that one, SQL Server. Why are we considering SQL Server? Yeah, because I think the number is not even correct. It's not 90%. It may be all in all, but for Project Server, it's 100% of data is stored in SQL Server databases. So therefore, we need to care about SQL Server. Definitely, yes. I think it's one of the key things, to be honest. What we see, when we have performance issues with our customers, this is the very first thing to check. Is SQL Server actually running smoothly? Does it make sense how it's set up? And some other things to consider, security, high availability, manage and monitoring. From the security perspective, there's lots of things to consider. Maybe just some or one thing, especially with SQL 2012 coming up right now, is the data encryption stuff. So that you think about maybe what happens actually if my backups get somewhere, right, with all the sensitive Project Server data. Right? And if you consider that one, that maybe your backups could not be placed to a safe location, consider the data encryption of your SQL Server data inside, and especially SQL 2012 helps you a lot with some of the new features in there. Right? So we just don't go into too many details here, but I think that's one of the key points. Maybe just some side note, I still see actually some SQL Server authentication enabled in a SQL Server environment. So I don't normally understand why that is, because Project Server doesn't require, SharePoint doesn't require as well. Mostly customers say, hey, yeah, well, because we have some monitoring tool, still require SQL Server authentication. Yes, but you put your SQL environment at risk. So maybe consider changing something here. No, I broke it. Okay. Just one thing, actually, because this is the key thing about performance in SQL Server, take a look at your file placement. So SQL Server or Project Server in SharePoint requires high I/O in many, many different places. So consider, and there is lots of best practices about this even on TechNet, and you should really follow these, putting the data files, log files on different drives and all this, monitoring your drives, depending on your disk architecture. If it's a SAN, if it's whatever you have, there are different best practices on all of these. Okay, but I think the general best practice here is really considering, okay, where are my files placed and which of these files have the highest I/O in there? And then put them on the right drives where you can really offer that that high I/O.
Can you go back to that previous slide?
Sure. Well, you're right. So in general, you would be able to add columns to that one, or it would be able to even add tables to that DBO. That's correct. But good that you asked that question. So is schema changes supported there? Supported, yes, but recommended from the best practices point of view? I would say no, because when doing, so what normally customers are doing in there is adding additional reporting tables or doing some additional queries, views, and whatever. Well, views might not be that critical, but especially more data inside the project server databases can affect performance of the project server database. If you make it bigger, if you make lots of SQL stuff in there, right? Therefore, I always recommend have a separate SQL Server database for that additional reporting you want to add. I even recommend it to any additional tools what the partners add, right? So have them in separate databases. You could, it's supported to add them to the DBO, but it's not really making too much sense from a long-term perspective. Okay. SQL Server 2012, that's one of the major reasons why going there, because of some new high availability features. So because what I see at many customers that they think about when high availability, they always think about SQL Server clustering. Yes, that's a perfect idea, thinking about this one. But I still see lots of customers not being that good in doing clustering, SQL Server clustering. So they have a cluster, but sometimes the SQL admin doesn't have any clue on what actually to look at when having a cluster. So it fails over, and then Project Server breaks because they didn't consider some things. So it could really be an interesting discussion now to find out what did actually break. And then it comes out, well, they didn't consider some things when setting it up and all of this. So I would say from what I've seen with AlwaysOn, so I'm not really a SQL Server expert, but what I see from SharePoint and Project Server perspective, it's much easier to configure, right? So it's much easier to understand what's actually happening when using the AlwaysOn feature. And it's just making things easier from the maintenance perspective, right? So if you do not consider SQL clustering, but if you still want to have high availability scenarios, consider what we have added in SQL 2012. Right? So there's lots of discussions going around what we can do with this one. And we see more and more deployments with exactly that, that feature. The last thing about SQL Server, and then Artem can hand over, there's actually just one thing which I would recommend, especially in SQL 2012, as we have done lots of investments there as well, which is using the extended events. So always when you want to monitor specific things happening in SQL Server, which is absolutely interesting for us when doing troubleshooting, absolutely interesting for everybody who wants to understand what's happening in SQL Server, wants to analyze some things, you can actually put these kind of events in your on your databases from some point of view to really get informed when something is happening, to get informed when some data is transferred, when a specific thing is happening on SQL Server. So this really is an interesting feature. I think it has already been there in SQL 2008 R2, but at least it has been lots of improvements on there, lots of more events now. You can really monitor nearly everything with that kind of stuff. So I really like that. I use it a lot when doing troubleshooting there to get informed when some data gets transferred there. Okay. Some other tools about monitoring SQL Server, absolutely valid, looking into Activity Monitor using Perfmon. So just to force on that again, if you want to have a stable Project Server environment, consider having a stable SQL Server environment. That's always a perfect basis to start with. Okay. All right, so going back to or forward to the capacity planning then, Artem, just one question, yeah? Not within this session right now, no. It wouldn't be enough time, unfortunately.
But we can discuss it offline just after the session. It's not a problem.
Sure. It is, right. There's so many things to tell you. Absolutely right. But
1 hour is not enough to cover all that.
We'll talk about it later on. Okay, cool. Okay.
Thanks, Rafael. So let's talk about something really important about Project Server 2013. So the question we normally get from our customers a lot is, so hey, I have that number of users, I have that number of resources, that number of timesheets, so what would be the right architecture I should build in my environment? And it would be even a valid question from those of you who are even planning the deployment of Project Server, but as it can be deployed and configured in a wide variety of ways, there is no right question, right answer for this question. And there is even a number of variables you should consider when undertaking the performance and capacity planning for Project Server 2013. So for sure, it's about projects. It's about the sizes of projects in terms of tasks, in terms of megabytes, in terms of assignments. But it's also about users, the concurrency of users. So how many users are going to hit this particular page in a given point in time? How many roles you have, because on one hand, the server will have to do some security checks to give this data to the users. And on the other hand, it will depend on how many data the user will actually have to get from this page. And it's about the distribution users across the globe. So if you have many employees around the world, then you will have to think of network latency for sure. And the other point would be thinking of the time frame to do the maintenance for your environment. It will be hard to find this time frame. Then it's about business objects inside out the project server. It's about risks, issues, custom calendars, custom fields. So all these business objects that put pressure on SQL and therefore the performance of your overall environment. As Rafael said, 100% of data is in SQL, so the SQL is the major point to think of. Then about some usage patterns. So what features are your users going to utilize in the project server? Maybe it's InfoPath forms or web-based scheduling or whatever else. And the page load, page payload. So how many really resource-intensive web parts you have on your page? Maybe reduce them, think of optimizing all that stuff. And the last but not least, it's line of business integration. Maybe you have some cool financial system you want to integrate with Project Server, with the databases, or just to display the web part, which is taking some data from it. And it's about virtualization, which we will cover later on. So to make it a little bit easier for you, we for sure introduce these data sets, these three data sets. They come from actually SharePoint, but they differ one from another in a little bit different way. It's about project, about the objects inside of these data sets, which differ. And the right approach here would be try to define the data sets. So I mean, try to understand how many projects you're going to have, how many resources, how many users you're going to have. So get close to the data set which fits you best, then implement it in your system, implement it in your environment. Then do some monitoring and optimization for sure first. Then after that, you may, on basis on the results of your analysis, you may think of scaling out or scaling up your environment in the end. And these three data sets have corresponding hardware topologies for sure. This is what Rafael already covered. For the smallest data set, we actually recommend at least two servers from the starting point. Well, and it even makes sense because when you have three servers in one, like the Rafael did not recommend to use, I would go for that as well. Someday when your environment really grows up, really is much bigger, then you will have to migrate your SQL server to another instance. So why not doing it from the very beginning, not to waste time in the end? These three data sets have one thing in common. It's about the parameters of web front-end and application servers, and it is fair in the very beginning. But as soon as you are doing more analysis of your farm, more monitoring, you might even think of adjusting this stuff. And one even more thing to think of is about the ratio between the web front-end and application servers. So if you look at the TechNet article, which covers the performance analysis test lab results, then it would state that it's fairly good to have the ratio 1:1, so one application server and one web front end. But in the end, when you have all the users going in your environment and when it changes, then you might think of reviewing these parameters because, for example, one of the biggest saving banks in Russia has recently migrated to the 2013 version, and as their users are not that familiar with the Project Pro, they decided to push them to use the web-based scheduling because the web-based, this web-based engine in SharePoint and Project 2013 is more or less the same as in Project Pro. And after doing some performance analysis of their farm, they understood that it's not good for them to use this ratio 1:1. And now they have 8 servers and 2 web front-ends and 6 application servers. So this may differ a lot from so case-by-case scenario. So when you are good with your data set, when you have defined, when you have it implemented, maybe you might think of virtualizing it. It's a very common trend right now. And there are two major things I would like to highlight. So the first is the virtualization does not provide the parity with the physical resources. So if you have the same resources assigned to a virtual machine, it will not be performing the same as your physical hardware. And it's all about planning, actually. So build your deployment plan and build your virtualization plan around it. Only after that you will get this parity in the end. And the second point is about virtualizing SQL. For sure it is supported long ago, but I would not personally recommend it, because when it comes to virtualized resources and when it comes to fighting for these shared resources, SQL Server goes a little bit crazy. So either if you still plan to have virtualized SQL, think of having dedicated disks, dedicated CPU, dedicated memory, and all that stuff for this particular SQL Server instance or SQL Server itself. And even think of, if you are using, which is as well very popular, using a SAN, even having a Loon, which is dedicated to this SQL Server. And the disks, which this Loon consists of, are the most rapid, like 15K or 10K disks. But still, we are not in the ideal world, and when you even do the most of your installation, the performance issues still arise, and there are a couple things to consider. It's for sure it's all about this pressure on the CPUs, pressure on memory. And as we, as PFE in Premier, we have these services which are called performance analysis of SQL, performance analysis of a Windows Server, performance analysis of the whole farm, and which we normally recommend, and which is a little bit logical, I would say, that do not just add resources if you see some higher utilization of your CPUs or memory, because it doesn't make any sense. It might be your developers that have recently deployed some WSP package, which is just leaking memory, and this is it. So do first some very comprehensive analysis of what is happening in your farm. I mean, what is really pressing these resources? What is really utilizing them? And then only after that, consider scaling up or scaling out the server. It's a little bit different when it comes to the SQL Server database server disk.io. So this was Rafael already covered. So split different files on different disks, tempdb on different disks, utilize high-speed disks, and think of using RAID subsystems. So summarizing this section, you hear, I would say, this phrase a lot, so implement best practices across all technologies. This is very common, but this is extremely useful. It's not only about SQL Server, it's not only about SharePoint, but it's about IIS as well, it's about Windows Server as well, security stuff, and monitor it for sure, because without proper monitoring, you won't get the best results. Then again, invest in the best SQL Server you can ever afford, because it's really the heart of the farm. Then use separate servers for every role, as I've already said, because of the pressure, because of the farms grow normally, and you will someday have to split these roles, so do it right away. And as soon as your hardware part is okay, so you have everything okay, then you would go for the operational stuff. So you would go for optimizing the views, the security, the page payload, and then extremely important is educating your users how to use this tool, because as soon as they get familiar with this product, with the Project Pro or Project Web App, with these tools they use, they will generate even less problems, not only in terms of performance and capacity, but in all other branches for you. So extremely useful is about these intensive workloads such as baselining, working with master projects, creating cross-project links, so all that stuff which generates additional workload on the SQL Server. So to conclude this part, again, determine the data set, implement hardware or virtual topology, whatever you like, whatever you want, whatever you have. And last but not least, monitor and optimize it accordingly to based on the results of your analysis. Yep. The previous slide? Sorry, could you please repeat? Yes, latency 1 millisecond and less. Well, it does, but this is what we normally recommend. Well, it's not that hard really to achieve, I would say, because this is what we normally see at our customers, 1 millisecond and less. Because even if you are using a virtualized environment, then consider having a dedicated network interface for this one. Because you can even have two VLANs. One is for operating between the servers of the farm, which would really increase the performance. Okay?
Yeah. Just on that same thread for a second, do you find that some customers experience performance degradation when they put, say, their database server on one subnet and their application server, WFP, on other subnets? Because of the increased latency in the network?
Yeah, I don't understand the question. So the question is about if we're having on different VLANs, the web front end and database server. Well, I wouldn't say that, at least from my experience. Maybe your guys having this same issue, but actually we don't see any decrease in the performance, at least from what we see normally. So when your plans are in place, your architecture plans, your deployment plans, your virtualization plans, then I would say that you're 95% done. Because just going through this configuration wizard, so just hitting these buttons, would not require much effort and would not require much time. But still, there are just a couple things to consider, to keep in mind. It's about some arrangements, so some fundamental stuff. So get prepared, get your accounts ready. Which might come from even the SharePoint installation if it took place before. But if not, then just create them from scratch. And about the configuring SQL Server Analysis Services, as Rafael said, 100% of our customers are utilizing OLAP cubes. And it even makes sense for the rich reports, so configure it in advance. And then I won't cover all these configuration steps. I will just want to highlight two options, actually, which you have. It's using this nice central administration interface when deploying and when configuring your farm. And the other one is using the PowerShell script. And I would personally vote for the PowerShell option. And this is what I even recommend to my customers. Whenever I get the request of helping them to implement their project server environment, I would really have a call with them and convince them that it's absolutely valuable. They would absolutely benefit from this option, because it's extremely time-saving. Well, if any of you have ever implemented or configured anything using the PowerShell, he would possibly agree with me that it's extremely time-saving. The only investment of time is just create the script, this is for sure, but after it is okay, then you are just ready to go. Then it's perfect for repeated installation. Why is that valid? When you have Project Server Farm, we normally recommend to have at least a test environment, or maybe even a development if you have enough resources. And when you have this script, you can just create these two, three, four environments which are completely the same. So because the script automates everything for you. Then remote deployments, for sure. If your domain policy permits this, then you can just run this script on several servers at once, and they will just be good. Then not very big pros, but still, when you are working with PowerShell scripts installations, you can name the databases very friendly, in a friendly way. Because when you have large deployments with dozens of databases, then it's really easy to maintain them, to monitor them if they have really friendly names. Go ahead. Later on, I will even comment, there are two ready scripts on the internet available. They are not actually from, let's say, TechNet blogs, but the guys who are really familiar with them, two ready scripts. You might have heard of this one, AutoSP Installer, which is for SharePoint 2013, and one wrote by our PFE, Jim Cox, is for Project Server, so you can just utilize them, adjust upon your needs, and you're ready to go. Yeah, we have them. Because even now, you might know that we have 52 commandlets for Project Server 2013, so which really enables us to configure and deploy the whole stuff just from the PowerShell. So going back to cons, you should be really knowledgeable about PowerShell. But in the end, you will even benefit from this as well, because 95% of our products now have PowerShell snap-ins. So once you get familiar with this tool, you will be able to configure to administer any other product Because the logic, the language of this is the same. You will just need to be aware of the command list itself. And one more con is about the kind of reconfiguration, so you won't be reverted to changes. Otherwise, if you don't have any stops, intentional stops inside of the script, which are asking, are you sure you want to do this or that, then you won't be able to reconfigure it in the middle. Because it's even not recommended to stop it because you don't know what's there behind, what's he doing. So obviously, the cons of the PowerShell options across the for the GUI option, it's extremely user-friendly, it's extremely intuitive, so if the button says create web app, it's supposed that it will create really the web app. And it's easier to revert your changes if there are any. So if you did just miss this checkbox, use HTTPS while creating the web app, then just delete it and create it from scratch. But the cons are really big here. It's extremely time-consuming, especially when you are using this for the first time. So if this is your first time you deploy SharePoint, then it will really require much time. And it's about really complicated repeated installations, because you might just miss the button, forget to configure something, or just do some misconfiguration. And what works in the development environment would not work in your production environment. And it will be really then hard to figure to sort this out. Why is that? So apart from the approaches to the installation itself, again, it's all about planning, really. Proper planning does 95% of your job. So determine data set, client requirements, exchange integration. Think of authentication. You know, by the way, that we are now, as default authentication method, we are using claims, Kerberos. So it's even much faster than classic Windows authentication. So it makes sense to use it for large deployments. Then, review hardware requirements, software requirements, and then even think of creating the documentation. This is what we normally, when we are doing the analysis, the comprehensive analysis of the forms while being on site at the customer, this is one of the questions we normally ask, and we normally require this documentation on their environment, because you will benefit from it in three ways at least. You want to engage the partner or Microsoft to do some job for you, just give them away the stuff and they will just get familiar with your environment. You have some new hires, we just want to get again familiar with the environment, just again give them away this environment, this stuff. And if you want to make some changes to your environment, it's again extremely helpful, just what you had configured before, and you can the changes as you want. So to conclude this one, again, plan your deployment, choose the right method, which is, by the way, PowerShell, and use some ready scripts. They're available from the internet, which is OTSP and Stellar, as I already said, and one by Jim Cox. Just bing them, and you will find them. So any other questions? Okay, then. So the question is, how easy to upgrade the farm? Yeah. From the 2010, you mean? Migrating from a single server instance to separate roles. So it's not that hard, because the only thing you will have to do is just install SharePoint and Project Server on another server and then connect them to the same database. This is it. Otherwise, if you want, you can just move your SQL Server, because it's as well supported, whereas we have now only one database and one content database and one Project Server database. You can set up your SQL Server on another machine, move your databases there, and you are again ready to go. So it's not that really hard. But I mean, why wasting this time if you can do from the very beginning do at least two servers, and this is it. You are all done. Okay, there I would hand over to Akbar, who will cover some upgrade stuff.
Thanks, Artem. Just to add on to that question regarding the subnets, the VLAN. So that's actually an interesting question, because we talk about high availability, and we have these servers, we have load balancers, I mean, we have front ends, we have application servers, and so forth. And I actually came across a customer that had a problem that had all this high availability, and the entire VLAN went down. So what happened to Project Server? Nobody could access it. And then I have some customers that really thought about this quite smartly and put some of their project environments and some of their project servers on different VLANs. So in the event that we do have a problem with some of your front ends or your application servers, we don't bring down the whole network, and we still have access to project server. So that's something to take into consideration when planning your project server environment as well, is that don't just look at the servers itself, look at the network, and look at high availability on that level as well. So just some of the considerations when upgrading. So here again, there is no in-place upgrade, guys. So you cannot stick in a CD into your current project server farm and go next, because that is not supported, and it won't work. So we are using the 5 database attach upgrade method. So when I say 5, that's 4 of your project databases and your content database, your SharePoint content database. Consolidation of databases, some of my teammates have mentioned that, so just keep into consideration as well. When we're talking about DR again, we used to talk about the 5 database attach method, so we're now looking at the 2 database attach method. So one project database and your SharePoint content database. There is no direct upgrade path coming from 2007. Or even 2003, so you cannot take your project environment from these versions and upgrade it directly to 2013. You have to get to project 2010 and then get to 2013. So I get this question often from customers. So I don't have a 2010 farm. Do I need to set up multiple servers? You don't need to. I mean, we could use a standalone virtual machine. You could use a trial license. I mean, that's valid for 180 days, because remember, we're only concerned about the data and upgrading those databases. So what I would suggest is if you're having hardware problems, if you don't have any licenses for Project 2010, use a trial license, set up a standalone VM, take your data to there, and then upgrade it to 2013. Very important as well, I've come across this where customer has upgraded over the weekend, they've gone with the Big Bang approach, and they've upgraded their entire project server environment. And come in on Monday, and they've got 1,000-plus project client users that they've forgotten to upgrade. So just remember, we've got no backwards compatibility again. So it's only Project Pro 2013 clients that can connect to project server. So when you're considering the upgrade, don't just look at the server itself. Look at your clients. Start planning for that. Sure. Yeah. Well, sure. It actually depends. So there is no in-place upgrade. So even if you, so I'm talking about 2010. So you cannot stick in a CD into Project Server 2010 and upgrade then. But if you had to come from a previous version, so if you're coming from 2003 Project Server, or even the likes of 2007, you'd first need to get to Project Server 2010 and then upgrade to 2013. Then you're fine. No, it's not supported. You still can't do that. So one thing you need to consider for is you need to budget for new hardware. So you still cannot stick in a CD into your current Project 2010 farm and say upgrade. That's not supported. So we're using the database attached, so you actually need to take your databases onto new hardware, onto a pre-built 2013 farm, and then upgrade that data. Okay. So some of the things, sorry, there's a question in the back. So unfortunately, there's no quick way forward. in terms of getting your users familiar with that interface? Because, I mean, the last thing you want to do is upgrade the clients and the users get there on Monday and they still don't have an idea on how to use it. So training is very, very important. It's still up there. That's something to definitely consider before upgrading as well, especially when we're talking about the clients. So that's definitely something that you would need to plan for. So if you're looking at 6 months or depending on how many users and how many clients you actually have using Project Server, training would be definitely one of the most important parts that you need to consider and still need to consider. Sure. So 1,200 people in one day, that's not going to happen. But yeah, over some time, and obviously depending on what features are we using in project itself, project client. So are we going to be taking them on deep dive? What are their roles? Are they going to be using basic features? So training still plays a very, very important part. I don't think there's a quick way around that in terms of overnight approach, getting everybody on there. Definitely something to start thinking and planning about training, sure. Farm. Yeah. Yeah, sure. So there is. Yeah, I get you. So you still be in a jam because I mean, there is no. Yeah, we don't have backwards compatibility. So either you're on 2010, or you're on 2013. So, yeah. Sorry, say that again. Well, you can have the two environments, but they'll be two separate environments, so they won't be talking to each other in any way. Sure. To help the transition, for sure, especially when we start talking about 1,200 clients, that's not going to happen overnight. Some of the things that you should be considering when you're upgrading, your settings, a lot of your project settings like your alternate access mappings, your authentication providers, your customizations, those don't automatically get upgraded. You need to make a note of these because these need to be put back onto your Project 2013 environment. So you should be using PowerShell or tools like SPS Farm Report and CodePlex that can give you output of all these settings and where you can put these settings back. Obviously, your customization itself, you need to test these out. Doesn't mean that it was working in 2010, that it's going to be working in 2013. We've got a number of commandlets, test commandlets in PowerShell that will help you evaluate if these customizations are ready for 2013. And something to think about when doing the actual upgrade, before you start the upgrade, your databases need to be in native mode, so we need to disable backwards compatibility. And once you actually do that, you cannot re-enable that. So one thing to suggest is that what you should do is actually take those databases to a test farm or intermediate farm, disable BCM to be on the safe side, and then actually start the upgrade process. Testing, very, very important. Don't do the big bang approach. Yeah, again, build test farms. Use real data. And that obviously gives you enough time to find out if there's any issues, any problems that you find out, so you can resolve that beforehand. And obviously, once you've done with the entire upgrade itself, don't just assume that you see a green button and it shows completed that all is good. You need to actually go and validate these. So check in your logs, check in your ULS logs, check in the data, confirming that everything is 100%. Some of the post-upgrade costs. So you might find some issues in terms of some of the things that you should be doing actually. So when you've done the upgrade, your issues and risk links in your project plans, they won't function. So there's some things that you need to do. For instance, you would need to bulk update your project sites and publish all your projects with associated project sites. even your Project Server 2013 enterprise types, you might have a problem where you only see the basic project EPT types, and you might not see the Project 2013 enterprise project types. So the workaround there is to add them manually. And yeah, if you've come from previous authentication methods, so if you've come from like a forms-based authentication to a claims-based authentication, and you've migrated the users, this is something to confirm. Just check that you've actually upgraded the web applications and confirm that's actually working. Your code, again, confirm that's working. Your workflows, if you've built any custom workflows, don't just assume that it's going to be working. You would need to go and check that. Very important one as well is that your databases, so if you've done some service packs, some CU updates, very good to go into the databases, well, not actually into the database, but confirm that the actual databases have been upgraded. Again, don't just assume that they're working and they've been upgraded. So these are just some of the common problems that you might have come across after the upgrade. So this happens generally when your PWA site hasn't been upgraded. So what happens in this scenario is that the actual upgrade of the PWA site didn't happen. So the commandlet to upgrade it didn't take place, and the workaround here would be just to rerun the upgrade command on the PWA site to get it working again. So another new one that we see coming across is that your views fail to load. So, this could be because of a number of reasons, but specifically in terms of the upgrade, your default view goes missing before your upgrade. So what happens is that it was actually deleted in Project 2010 before the actual migration. And there is a user properties table that actually populates all your views, your personal views. And that the problem there is that it's total empty. So what we need to do for now is, if you do a new migration, you won't have this problem, because what happens is that when a user navigates to a Project Center page or Resource Center page, it actually populates this user properties table with the views. For now, we're working on an update, and the workaround right now is not something that I'm very fond of. It's running a query and running some scripts against the database and populating the user tables. I wouldn't suggest doing this in production without testing this 100% and making sure that you're happy with the results before going ahead in production. Things that you should be checking after your upgrade, so after the upgrade is actually done, you want to connect to your PWA sites. You want to check your clients that they can actually connect to your project servers. You want to create some projects. Check your custom fields. Check your project workspaces. And again, check your reports. Don't just assume that they're all working. Please confirm this. Monitoring. So this is something that we pick up all the time when we're doing our health checks on customer environments, is that there is no monitoring solution that's actually monitoring Project Server. Customers have solutions that are monitoring the server hardware and so forth, but nothing is actually monitoring the project environment, your service applications, your queues, your websites. So what we try to do and what everyone should be doing is actually being proactive. So I rather know about a problem on a Sunday night, have enough time where I can hop in and fix the problem, rather than getting a call on Monday morning from the help desk or from a user to say, hey, project is down. So if you don't have a monitoring plan, this is something you should definitely be considering implementing. Develop a dashboard, very, very useful for troubleshooting performance-related issues in terms of Project Server. So we can actually drill down and have a look at execution time, total duration times of SQL. We can have a look at read and write queries to SQL Server. So very, very useful in terms of pinpointing problems, performance-related problems to Project Server, and we should be using this. Very cool feature. Lots of you might have heard about it. Project Log Level Manager. So we all know what a pain it is to actually go to troubleshooting and looking at ULS logs. So with Project Log Level Manager, we can monitor specific entities for a project, a task, timesheet. So very, very useful for monitoring these type of errors and monitoring specific errors like timesheet errors. So something just to keep into consideration is that the log level manager runs off a cache copy of the configuration. So very, very important that if you make any changes to any of the settings in log level manager, that you need to update the cache again. Just talking about software updates a bit, some of the steps that you should be doing when you're actually updating your environment. So you should be testing your updates. Don't just assume that it will work. Back up your environment before you start the update. And obviously, try to slipstream your images, single deployment packages. So instead of having multiple CDs with service pack 1, 2, 3, and so forth, maybe look at slipstreaming your updates into one single package. So when you have a disaster, you could just load that one package. No, you should be able to load the last cumulative update. So if it's March, it should be March. If it was December, you should be able to use December. So you shouldn't have to do all of them at once because it is a cumulative update. It includes all previous updates into that.
Right.
Yeah.
The RTM version, if you didn't have the March 2013 public update, sure. You couldn't do cumulative
updates
after that. Sure. So that's why I asked the question. But if the system...
It shouldn't be a problem. So I didn't have a problem with that. We shouldn't have a problem with that. Yeah. And obviously, just verifying your entire update has gone successful. Last, disaster recovery planning, very, very important. We see a lot of customers that either don't have disaster recovery plans. So this is a percentage of customers that we see. So there's about 40% of customers that we've come across that have disaster recovery plans and either have tested them, and then we see about 60% of them that don't have any disaster recovery plans and haven't tested them. So guys, this is very, very important. We need to know what we need to do, what are those steps we need to take when Project Server falls down, and this is something that we come across most environments, and most of the customers get it right, and obviously some of them don't. And that's it. And to conclude, sorry. Yeah, so when we're talking about DR now, so we used to do the 5 dB attach method. We've got the 2 dB attach method now. So you've got your project database, and you still need your SharePoint content database.
Right, but before, if you wanted to do, you had separate databases.
Sure. It's one database, so. Sure. And that was a problem. That was a big problem, and that was a big problem in the previous version because we had 4. That's it. Yeah. So thanks, everybody. These are some related sessions that you should attend that's coming up or have come up. And if there's any questions and answers, we give the answers. So. Thank you very much, and obviously, please fill out the evaluations.